Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Join us September 25th, 26th, and 27th for a three-day special streaming event,
Strange Realities,
to push the limits of your reality. Featuring authors, academics, researchers, occultists, experiencers, podcasters, and practitioners. All presenting fresh cutting-edge material and research.
Streaming live.
Featuring presentations by
Brent Raines,
editor of Alternate Perceptions Magazine.
Aaron Gullius,
host of the Saucer Life Podcast.
David Metcalf,
writer and researcher.
Alan Greenfield,
author of Secret Cipher of the Euphonauts.
Stephanie Quick,
writer and blogger.
Red Pill Junkie,
14 researcher and explorer.
Tim Banal,
host of Banal of America.
Guy Malone,
iconoclast and troublemaker.
Timothy Ritter,
host of Strange Familiars.
Kiki Dombrowski,
author and practitioner.
Greg Bishop,
author of Project Beta.
Jenny Ashford,
host of 13 O'Clock.
Recluse,
host of The Farm.
Jack Montgomery,
Folk Magic.
Joshua Cutchin,
author of Thieves in the Night.
Reverend Michael Carter,
alien contact experiencer.
Dr. Future,
host of Future Quick.
Tony Kale,
author of Memphis Hoodoo.
Rin Collier,
occultist.
Soraya Ascap,
host of Where Did the Road Go?
And John Tinney,
Ghost Stalkers and Hell.
All 3 days, only $20. Tickets and info available at StrangeRealitiesConference.com. Brought to you by the Conspiranormal Podcast. Conspiranormal.com. Strange Realities.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. If you've seen something strange, if you've had an encounter with the paranormal, a cryptid, a ghost, a UFO, or if you know of a story you think we should cover, you can email us, strangefamiliarspodcast@gmail.com. As you may have heard in the opening, this weekend is Strange Realities Conference. I will be giving my talk on Sunday, but the conference is all weekend long. I think it starts Friday and goes through Sunday. I'm the second to the last speaker on Sunday.
Who's the last speaker?
Why, that's Joshua Cutchin. So we will be closing down the conference with two talks based on topics from Where the Footprints End, Volume 2, which is yet to be published. So you get kind of a preview of Where the Footprints End, Volume 2.
Now, how does that work with as far as a writer when you're doing it virtually? Like, will I have to provide things? Will there be only green M&Ms available in the living room? Or?
Why, yes, indeed. My talk is on disappearing evidence in the Bigfoot phenomenon.
I've listened to it. It's decent.
Well, thank you. I think Josh is doing altered states of consciousness in the Bigfoot phenomenon.
Will he be in an altered state of consciousness while he gives the talk?
That's up to Josh. We'll see. It's StrangeRealitiesConference.com if you want more information. I'm sure there's still tickets available as it's virtual, and there's probably limitless tickets.
You could even get a front row seat, theoretically.
Theoretically, yeah. So tune into that if you're going to attend the conference. I guess I won't see you because it's virtual, but you will see me Sunday night. Lots of other big things in the works. I'm nearly finished the second Wilderness Geist full album. So I did the first one, and then I did the EP, Death is the Mother of Us All, which came with the Hellier set I did for Wilderness Geist. And then we made that available separately, just a few copies. You can find that on Bandcamp if you just want to download. The new Wilderness Geist is called Wilderness Geist Pandemonium. It's made using sounds recorded in Pandemonium when Chad and I were there for our trips.
I was going to use those context clues and figure that out.
And some other sounds as well. I've added some other drones and music and so forth that I've played, but that should be coming soon. I have an art book coming soon. It's a lot of my illustrations I've done for paranormal topics. It's called Apparitions. That's forthcoming. I'll definitely be announcing that and taking pre-orders on that. I think what we're going to do is take pre-orders. The first 50 people to buy it will get a trading card with the art book, of course. Then the art book will be available beyond that. I'm not sure if that's going to be on Amazon or not because we're getting it printed in a different way. It'll definitely be available from us. I'm going to try to get it on Amazon, but I absolutely don't know how to do that. And of course, Josh and I are working hard on Where the Footprints End Volume 2. So that is well on its way. I think we're just finished the editing stages, so I will start the layout and get going on it. A lot of things coming up from me. Stay tuned. We'll let you know when they're all available here for sure. Tonight we've got two guests. We've got Abra, who has a flannel man sighting. Actually, she didn't see it. Other people saw the flannel man in her home, though.
That's almost worse.
It is kind of, in a way, right?
Yeah.
It's like to know that other people are seeing this and it's there.
Uh-huh. I really like this story, too, because it's one of those, like, where she didn't have an idea that this was a phenomenon. People who come to it, like, just purely accidentally.
Yeah, she mentioned it as, like, a ghost story in a Facebook group or something, and somebody saw it and said, hey, flannel man's a thing. This is a thing, and pointed her towards us. So that's always really cool when people don't know, like you said, they don't know, like, flannel man's a thing, and then they discover it. Our second story is going to be with Lorraine, who checked in from Canada. She was riding her horse as a young woman and saw something very, very strange. Something white and too big to be a deer or anything like that in the bush out there. So, but let's go ahead and hear Abra's story about the flannel man and some other strange things that happened around her house. Tonight we're talking with Abra, who has some, what sounds like flannel man experiences. Did this happen in the house you're currently staying in?
No, this actually occurred in my former residence.
Okay. And as comfortable as you are, you can be as general as you want, but you know, about where was this? You can give town, county, whatever you want.
Sure. This occurred in my house in Landenburg, Pennsylvania.
Okay. So what was going on?
Oh, boy. Well, I had a few incidents happen while we were living there. We lived there about 8 years, and we had just had twins. And starting about pretty much after the kids were born, we had a bunch of strange occurrences. But specific to the, I guess you want to call him the flannel man, what happened, our first encounter was we had a friend come over, and she and her husband were sitting having dinner with us, and as she was pulling out of our driveway when she left, she said that she saw from our large picture window on the second floor a man standing there. She said he was very large, very tall, and he was wearing a red and black sort of a lumberjack looking thing, lumberjack shirt, and I guess, you know, you'd call it a flannel shirt, but she said it was like a red and black plaid shirt, and he had a beard, and he was very tall, and he looked sort of like he was from a different time. And she said to me, this was afterwards, and she said that she didn't know who he was or what he was doing there. And the next day she called me and told me this, and I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. And we found that to be very strange, obviously, because there was nobody else in our home except for us. And
sure, yeah.
Yeah. Our second incident was really bizarre. My husband was home with our children, and I think we had a babysitter at that point. He was having a friend over. I was not there. I was busy traveling for business. And my husband told me that his friend Steve, who is up from Maryland, was sitting across from him, and they were basically sitting around having a couple of beers after dinner and just shooting the breeze. and his friend went ghostly white, totally pale, lost all the blood in his face, apparently. And he lost his mind. I mean, that's what my husband said. He said he never saw anything like it. He was just frozen. And then he said, I am leaving. I just saw a man in a flannel plaid shirt walk into a wall, and I am leaving. This place is freaking me out. And he literally just jumped in his car and went back to Maryland.
Wow.
And drove like 3 hours home. And
wow.
He never spoke about it again. He was very, very upset about it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Was this house particularly old, or was there anything unusual about it?
No, that was the weirdest part, was that the house, I believe, was built around 1974. And my husband's parents actually had owned the house previous to us moving in, and they moved into a smaller house. So the house was a modern house.
That's actually not terribly unusual for both hauntings and other stuff. Did his parents report anything unusual when they were living there?
Well, it's interesting because they actually lived there with our niece before my husband and I took over the ownership of the house. And my in-laws had never actually said anything to us, but I mentioned something else that had happened where when I was upstairs tending to my children, I would hear laughter, like children playing jacks and a lot of laughter and sort of scurrying around the house and a ball being bounced and dropped, like a little rubber ball sound. And my husband wasn't home. It was just me with the kids. And I had this happen very frequently. And we lived in a rural area, so there's no way there was any noise or anything around or people walking in our house. And I mentioned this to my niece, and she said that my in-laws and she had experienced this many times as she was growing up in that house.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. How old were your children about the time when this was happening?
Let's see. I'm going to say probably became fairly active from the time they were one till about the time they were about 3 years old.
Okay. Interesting. Now, did you move or did this stuff just stop?
No, we moved. We moved when our kids turned 4 because we wanted to locate a little closer to my family. They live on the New Jersey side of the river. So we moved about 2 hours north.
Very, very interesting. Now, did you ever experience anything in this house other than hearing those sounds? Like, did you ever see anything?
I did not see anything, but there were a few things that I felt things and I heard things. So I never really saw anything. But one thing that is very strange is that I'd tell my husband that in the middle of the night, I would periodically hear a loud knock on our door and it would literally wake me up out of a sound sleep. And, you know, he really sort of didn't put any stock in it. And then one night about, I don't know, somewhere around 3 o'clock in the morning, the other thing had always happened around 3 or 4 in the morning. And around 3 in the morning, there was two knocks, very, very loud knocks on our bedroom door. And my husband was woken up and I sort of said, now, do you believe me? And he was really upset. And he actually, you know, was very protective of me. And he went out there. I can't remember if he brought his baseball bat or what, but I think he brought something with him. I can't remember what it was, to the door and opened the door and there was nothing there.
Yeah.
So that did happen. And he was witness to that. The other thing that I did hear something else that was very strange. We had a friend over. He's a very tall gentleman from Jamaica, and he's one of our friends. And he and I were talking about how I had experienced these very strange, you know, occurrences, which was like, you know, laughter. And I told him about the knocks and things like that. And literally, when I was telling him these stories, something I only heard one time there, and he was witness to this, was that we had both heard it, and it was a man whistling to sort of calling like a donkey or a horse or something and jingling like some kind of like a harness or something. And it was like right in front of us. And I said, okay, this is really strange. And he was again, quite concerned because he also heard this whole thing.
It was
very strange. Yeah.
Wow. Now, did you ever feel concerned about, you know, having young kids in the house or anything with this?
Well, a little bit, because again, we just had so many odd occurrences in this house that I'm thinking about. One of the strangest things that ever happened was that my son, who was just turning 3, and I wasn't sure what was going on with him, but I remember that he was in our home, and my husband was born in Würzburg, Germany, on an army base. And when he was growing up, he spoke German for the first 3 years of his life, but he'd never ever used German with me or my son. And my son was walking around in his room, and he was speaking in German.
Wow.
And my husband witnessed this, and he just looked at me. He said, "Did you teach him any German?" I said, "I'm looking at you because I don't speak a word of it."
Right.
And so he started babbling in German, and he just kind of like marched around the room like a soldier, and we couldn't figure this one out at all. You know, we basically put him in front of the TV for Sesame Street. So, you know, he had no contact at all with anything German, etc. So that was also very bizarre.
Wow. Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And,
yeah.
And did this occur for a long period of time or just once?
It happened a couple of times and then it just stopped.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So like I'm also a parent of twins, and I'm wondering how I would receive that personally. You know what I mean? Like if my son was doing that, I'm trying to like actually, like, I don't know. I don't know. How did you handle it? Like, was this a scary thing or?
Well, no, I guess I was more in shock than scared. I mean, I couldn't put my finger on what I was witnessing. It was just something that just happened so quickly that I really didn't have any reaction time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did mention it to my husband, he sort of said, you know, he is speaking in German and he is marching around like a soldier, and we couldn't figure this out at all. And he suggested, he said, oh, he was sort of joking, and he said, oh, well, maybe it was a past life or something. Maybe he was a German soldier. And I said, you know, anything is possible. I have no idea.
Right. Yeah. Do you remember anything, any of the words? I mean, I guess you wouldn't have known, but did your husband know any of the words that he was saying?
You know, we never really spoke about it after it happened, but he did recognize it was sort of like German, like young, what sort of not babbling exactly, but he never really spoke about it. No, I don't recall him telling me what he said.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But this
is so interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. I ask this of everybody who has these encounters or
yes,
you know, with Flannel Man. Have you, or I suppose your husband or even your children, have you had sleep paralysis experiences?
I don't believe any of us have had that, no. I've heard of this. As far as I know, none of us have had that, no.
Mm-hmm. And I think the answer is going to be no, because I think you would have brought it up. But I ask because this is another thing that tends to happen. Any weird encounters with like ghostly or strange shouldn't be there, black dogs?
Hmm. No. However, and I'm not sure if this is connected, but we did have a series of 3 black cats that would come to us. They would always show up, and they were extremely affectionate to my husband. And again, I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but no, we never had anything like a black dog appear for no particular reason.
Still very, very interesting stuff. That's so interesting. So moved away and the stuff just stopped?
Yes, the thing stopped, but something happened to me, which again, I never really took much stock in these things. But after we moved into actually a very old house. Our house that we currently live in was built before the Revolutionary War, parts of it were.
Wow.
And then it was added on to around 1790. We live actually right pretty much at the spot where Washington crossed the Delaware.
Oh, wow.
On his way to, I believe it was the Battle of Trenton. And my husband and I, we lived here for quite some time, But we would periodically go on trips to see his parents, which was much further south. And en route, it was not unusual for me to get very strange feelings and goosebumps. And I could smell gunpowder and I could taste it almost in my mouth. And this happened when we went, I had no idea like what happened on these roads or whatever, but on certain parts of the roads where Maryland meets the Pennsylvania border, there were a lot of skirmishes and there were a lot of things, having to do with slavery and abolition. And I would always feel like if something violent occurred, I could almost sense it where we were going on the highway. And I would literally have goosebumps and the hair would stand on the back of my arms. And this happened not frequently, but, you know, we would just for fun, we would research where this occurred. And every time this happened to me, a major battle took place.
Oh, so the feeling would happen first, then you do the research and find out like, oh, a battle took place there.
Yes.
Oh, that's very interesting too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Abra, for sharing your stories. I love to get these Flannel Man accounts. I know you said you were talking about it in a group and somebody said, hey, this is something that they talk about on Strange Familiars, I believe, right? So you hadn't heard about it before.
I had never heard about it before. I'd never spoken to anybody about this before. It just seemed like, I just have these memories of people who've, you know, told me about these things. It's secondhand information, but I've had, you know, several people say exactly the same description. So,
yeah. And I don't know if it's the same guy people are seeing. I think it's not, because some descriptions have him tall, some short, sometimes a beard, sometimes not. But yes, the checkered shirt or the plaid shirt seems to be the common thing, and the sort of lumberjack look to the person. My wife actually saw one of these entities, woke up and it was standing above us. And we were staying in her childhood bedroom in her parents' house, and she woke up. Woke me up screaming. I never saw it, but you know, wow. He was standing at our feet, looking down at us, and that's the first time I heard of it. And then some years later, I stumbled across the fact that other people were seeing, you know, this entity or entities that dress like this, whatever it is, and then realized it was something people were seeing all over. So, who he is or why, I don't know, but a lot of people were seeing him.
Interesting.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Oh, well, thank you.
You pointed out something that was quite profound yesterday.
I doubt that, but what was it?
That if you had started with 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy, when we started doing 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy ads, by now, you would have a perfect puppy.
In some cases, the puppy would already be grown.
It's not so much making the perfect puppy. It's about you and your puppy kind of learning to become perfect for each other. And 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy can help you do that. They have a relationship-based approach to training. They have online sources with video lessons, a secret Facebook group. You can join the group and interact with other puppy owners. And they have one-on-one options available as well. You can find 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy at sithappens.us. Look for the 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy link at the top of the page. 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy can help you with things like mouthing and biting, potty training, fear and nervousness, barking, if your puppy's chewing on furniture or shoes or other things they shouldn't be chewing on, crate training, hyperactivity issues, leash training, and more. 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy can teach you what to do, but also, and perhaps more importantly, they can teach you what not to do. Again, you can find them at sithappens.us. Look for the 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy link at the top of the page.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Tonight we're speaking with Lorraine, who has a very, very interesting encounter that happened in Ontario. And was this on your family's property?
Yes. On and around.
I don't know how specific you want to get in the location. You can be as general or specific as you want. But is it farmland?
Yeah, I can narrow it down. Ontario's a pretty big place.
Right,
so
it needs
a little bit of narrowing down. Eastern Ontario, southeastern Ontario, pretty close to the St. Lawrence. Most Americans will be, I guess, most familiar with that as a landmarker.
Okay. And about when did this happen, approximately? What year, I suppose?
You know, since I first wrote to you, I've been trying to narrow it down as much as I could, and I was 11 years old, so that would age myself here. That would have made it 1994. 96. Okay. So late 90s. That's the best I can pin it down.
Right.
Mid to later side of the mid 90s.
Go ahead and walk us into the story. Give us any background that you think is appropriate to it, and go ahead and walk us into your story.
All right. So just a little bit of more general background and context, I guess, would probably be good to kind of set the scene.
Yeah.
So the area I'm talking about, very rural. If you're familiar with it nowadays, I guess a lot of parts of outside of major cities and everything, it's been built up and developed a lot. But back when this, experience took place, I guess you would say, it was very rural. So, my family's property was one of three houses on, a four-mile stretch of dirt road. Really very rural, a lot of farmlands, a lot of cedar forest, a lot of swamp. Not northern Ontario, kind of total middle of nowhere, but very rural, not a very dense population.
Right, yeah. Sounds actually kind of wonderful.
It was really lovely. It still is a lovely place, I should say. Yeah, so my family had that property for probably 5 or 6 years at that point. My family had a horse farm, so fairly sizable place, good acreage and everything. Yeah, it's hard to know, I guess, because my experience actually kind of comes at the end of this story. So I'll start with, it's kind of something that several family members kind of experienced or had sightings with. So I'll go, I guess, in chronological order would probably be the easiest way to go about it.
Okay.
Rather than jumping around. Yeah, and actually it's funny, since I first wrote to you and knew that we were going to do this podcast, I've kind of recruited family members, to jog their memories for me so I can kind of get this as straight.
That's wonderful, though. I love when guests do that.
yeah. Well, and it was kind of, it was kind of interesting and fun for me, too. So anyway, like I said, my family had been living there for about 5 or 6 years, very rural setting, very kind of isolated on our little dirt road. And I guess the first instance was something that my stepdad experienced. And he was out off of our property, a ways down, but, still in the same area. And he was out with the dogs and off the road, there's fair amount of trails around there, either old trails that connected the old farm properties or four-wheeler trails, horseback riding trails, stuff like that. So he was out on a trail with their dogs not far from the house, and he heard what he said was a loud crashing through the woods. It sounded like trees being knocked over, something really large moving through the woods. And the dogs heard it, he heard it, and he said he just kind of caught a very faint glimpse of something white moving through the trees a ways away from him. but nothing that he could see clearly. Mostly it was just this noise that really got his attention and gave him a bit of a spook. So he just came home, you know. he didn't want to investigate any further, was out with the dogs kind of thing, like didn't want to put any of them in any danger. Wasn't really sure what it was, but it was enough to be like, all right, that's it. We're going back to the road and we're going home. Mm-hmm. So, and I remember hearing about that as a kid. Like, I can remember him telling my mom about it and it just being kind of like, you know, just kind of like a one-off, you know, oh, there's something weird in the bush today. Like, you know, not really too freaked out about it, but just something odd, you know, something of note. Probably about a year after that, my older brother actually had the second kind of sighting or experience, I guess you'd say. And that was on the family property. And he was out back behind the barn washing horse water buckets, right? So kind of like, you know, focused on a task, like looking at the ground, not really looking around much. And the way he described it to me was, as he was kind of working away, he didn't hear anything, but he just kind of like something, you know, made him look up for a second. And he says that he saw, and this is going to almost sound like Predator style or something like that, but he says that when he looked up, out of the corner of his eye, he saw what looked like almost like, I'm trying to think of the right word to describe it, like a seam, you know, almost like a picture flash or like a ripple, as you'd see on like a water surface or something, you know, like a mirage kind of effect, where you see that kind of wave on the road, except for it was off to one side of his vision. I guess it would have been like going left to right, or that would have been south to north, the way the property lies out. But anyway, so he sees this strange mirage kind of effect out of the corner of his eye looking up, and he said within 1 to 2 seconds tops from seeing this kind of mirage ripple, he saw just a white flash move in the same direction until another kind of mirage ripple occurred at the end of the tree line, and then it disappeared. And he said this was like a very, it wasn't like a flash of light where it took across like the whole sky or the whole horizon or the whole field of vision, but it was as if this flash moved, he said, anywhere from like 10 to 15 feet from the ground across his kind of line of vision until it disappeared again. And he said, although it was kind of, the best way he could describe it was kind of like a light, it wasn't transparent. Like the white thing that he, I guess you could say, saw when he looked up, although it kind of acted maybe like a flash of light or something, it wasn't, it was opaque. You know, like it looked like a textured, I don't know, image maybe.
Just, like it had form to it.
Yeah, yeah. Like although it kind of, it's like it's a wave and a particle or something like that, you know?
Right. So just to kind of get a picture, he saw this sort of mirage-y predator sort of effect, and then this white kind of streak or light comes out of that and then dissipates again, like across this field of vision on the other side into the mirage effect. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. He said there was no sound associated with it whatsoever, though, which was kind of freaked him out a little bit more almost, he said, because it was like it seemed so much more unlikely that he would look up just in time to see that without any other notification or anything else to kind of make you look, you know, like. Mm-hmm. Just that kind of the odd timing of it, and just that, you know, being really focused on a job, but then just happening to look up and see this anomaly all of a sudden, like just at the right time, was part of the weirdness about it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess he had that happen to him, or that sighting, within the same year as my stepdad's experience. And it wasn't until at least a year had passed before I had my kind of encounter, you would say. And so what happened in my instance was, because we lived on the horse farm, like I was lucky enough to ride as a kid and have a pony and all that really fortunate stuff. So I used to do a ton of trail riding. And, you know, by the time I was like 11, 12, you know, I kind of like experienced enough and knew the property and the surrounding areas enough that my folks were fine with letting me go out by myself on these trail rides, right, with my pony. So I was out doing that one night, as I did like a lot of summers back then. I don't know. I mean, I imagine this is probably very similar to a lot of like upper New York State landscapes, you know, where it's kind of like discount UK, where there's like a lot of old farm fields are still marked off by tree lines and old stone fences. And, you know, the land is kind of laid out in that type of a fashion, right?
Right, yeah.
So I'm going along. I'm 3 fields behind the last horse paddock. So I'm a fair ways away from the barn, a little ways off the property at this point. There are some swampy areas and stuff and other places where you couldn't just go, you know, what field to field as you were heading away. You kind of had to deke in and out of like little brush areas to get around swamp or get around fence lines or whatever. So I came out of like a little cedar bush into this next field, and I'm going along, going towards the back, and there's a tree line up ahead of me, kind of separating the next field over. So I can't see directly into it as I'm walking towards it, you know? Mm-hmm. But as I'm getting closer and closer to the next field, the first thing that kind of tipped me off was my pony. You know, he perked up all of a sudden. Like, it's pretty, you know, this is a pony that you trust a little kid with, so it's very bomb-proof, like, very, you know, calm, cool, collected character, right?
Right, yeah.
So as we're going along, that was the first thing that let me know something else was around. Because the pony, I could feel him get tense and perked his ears up and started, like, not snorting, but really sniffing, you know? And if you've been around horses, you probably know what I mean. Like, kind of just, you know, when they're smelling what's coming downwind, right? Mm-hmm. So that kind of made me start looking around. And then as we're coming around the corner, like, so now I would be about to be walking parallel to the next field back. We come around that corner, and there's a break in the tree line where I can see through to what's over in the next field. And it's difficult because by the time I saw whatever I saw in the next field over, my pony had already seen it and decided he wanted nothing to do with it. So it was kind of like, as I saw it, the pony is already spooking and getting ready to run back towards the barn. Mm-hmm. So it was a very brief glance, but what I saw looking over back into the next field was, like, for lack of a better term, basically just this giant white thing moving through the tall grass. Now, it wasn't the way my brother described it, though, because he saw this weird mirage effect, which I never saw, and he also described it as being, like, quite significantly tall, like anywhere from 10 to 15 feet, he said, in height, seemed to be, like, how high it stretched. Mm-hmm. And what I saw was, I'd say, maybe in the 10, 12-foot range, but it was, like, long. You know, it was, I don't know, and it was a little bit skewed because of how tall the grass is in those untended old fields or whatever, but it was very long, and it seemed to be moving almost like a wave, like as it was moving towards, away from me, I should say, as it was moving away from me towards the next tree line, it didn't stay uniform in height. It kind of seemed to move almost as like a wave would, like from side to side, like a wave in a bathtub. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And like I said, it's a very brief glance. So I probably saw it, you know, do that wave motion twice before, you know, when I looked back, I couldn't see it anymore because the line of sight was gone. But yeah, so very, very long, horizontally. And I don't know, with the grass, I would guess maybe, you know, when the wave motion would come up one side, it would have gotten to maybe 6 feet, you know, from ground up. Mm-hmm. That's a very rough estimate, though. But yeah, definitely not quite the same as what my older brother had kind of described, but very just anomalous. Like, not a kind of shape that you would ever associate really with, like, an animal.
Right. Just lengthwise, though, are you talking, you know, length of a horse or longer?
Longer. Longer, for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, probably, like, a horse and a half. Okay. Maybe two horses.
Okay.
Since we're already dealing with that kind of subject matter.
Yeah, well, I figured, you know, as a kid, that'd be something that you would be familiar with, the size of, and could probably judge it fairly well from that.
Yeah, no, actually, that is a really good context to put it in for me. That does make it a lot easier to kind of narrow it down than just trying to guess feet or inches.
Right.
Yeah, so anyway, so I see this thing. It scares the absolute crap out of my pony, which in turn spooks me, too. The pony, like, takes off freaking full speed, makes it almost all the way back to the barn before I can kind of, like, pull him up a little bit. And when we get back to the barn, my mom was outside. And so I start telling her what happened, right? I'm like, oh, my goodness, I saw the white thing. Like, I don't know what it was. It was huge, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, she wasn't, like, super indulgent of the whole thing. But she, you know, she wasn't just going to, like, totally brush me off. Mm-hmm. Like, she asked me some questions, you know, and, well, what did it look like? What was it doing? Where did it go? And I was having a really hard time articulating it. Like, I still have a hard time articulating exactly how it seemed, right? Mm-hmm. So at one point, she asked me, she said, well, did it look like if you threw a rock at it, it would hit it? And that, even as a little kid, really tripped me out. Because all of a sudden I was like, you know what? It didn't. It looked like if I threw a rock at it, I don't know if it would hit it or if it would go right through it or what. So that I remember, that part I almost remember like just as vividly as the sighting itself.
Right. That's an interesting question to ask.
Yeah. I think it was because I was just having such a hard time describing, you know, like, oh, but it was like, you know, it was moving funny, like up and down. And, mm-hmm. So anyway, and then it's funny, actually, like I was telling you, I kind of went and re-interviewed my family about this prior to speaking with you. And I talked to my mom about it again, just to ask what she remembered and everything. And she said the one thing that made her kind of take me more seriously at the time was she said that she had never seen the pony look more terrified.
Ah.
You know, she said it was really obvious that something had actually unsettled the horse, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. and that he was, like, really worked up. So, and that kind of in hindsight to me, too, I hadn't really considered that as much at the time, but now in hindsight, I'm like, yeah, you know, that kind of is an extra indication of something unusual, I think, because like I said, this was an older pony, super bomb proof, like, you know, the kind that you send your kid out on without thinking it's gonna buck or rear or freak out, you know. And, you know, like living where we were too, like the horses are used to seeing deer, they're used to hearing coyotes, not to say that the wildlife won't spook them anyway, but she said it seemed like something a little more intense than any reaction she'd seen before mm-hmm. from that horse, you know? It seems so funny to me because in a way it seems very anticlimactic and very not particularly, not something you can really draw a lot of conclusions from.
Yeah, and, yeah.
But at the same time, that's kind of what has kept me thinking about it, I think, all these years.
Right.
Like, so I did tell some of my friends about it as a kid, you know, and then, and as, like, teenagers, like, because I, you know, grew up friends with some of the kids in the area, so they kind of knew my mom's property and all that kind of stuff. You know, when we were little kids, like, no one I told really took me seriously. It was just like, yeah, you're making stuff up or whatever, you know. One of my friends later on suggested that maybe it was a snowy owl, because we do get snowy owls in this area. But, there's no chance that a bird could have been that big. You know, that would be like... That would be like mutant snowy owl territory.
Yeah, yeah. At that point, it might as well be something paranormal if an owl's that big anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure someone has suggested moose to you before.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another kind of interesting, like, follow-up, is because, you know, years and years later, my husband, who's from the same area but older than me, so, you know, when I was, like, 11, 12, riding my pony through the countryside, his friends were old enough to be hunting already, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he actually had, when I told him about this story, it totally, like, rang this bell in his mind, because he had a friend who used to hunt in that same area. He can't really narrow it down to what year this would have been, but it was, you know, I'd say within, like, a 3 to 4 year range of the sightings that my family had. He said the friend he had, he used to hunt out there, claimed that he saw a giant white moose in the bush, which is the closest thing to an explanation that I can think of for what I saw and for what my stepdad saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the crashing in the bush, that could very well be a really big moose, because they are monstrous. like, they get huge. And I was thinking, maybe if it was a moose in some kind of stage of, like, getting up or something, like, and that, because I've looked up albino moose since then, and they can be absolutely pure white, like, even the antlers. And I thought maybe that would explain the side to side motion, perhaps, you know, like the kind of a moose antlers or a mm-hmm. moose shaking its head in some way. That's one possible thing. But, I mean, even an albino moose sighting is extremely rare.
Oh, yeah. It's still amazing. If that's,
yeah.
You know, it sounds like there's something more to this. There's something that was particularly, not even necessarily disturbing, but, you know, unique, or something about it told you, even as a kid, like, pay attention to this. This, something's not right here.
Yeah. You know? And the thing, too, there was no sound. Well, I mean, not that I could hear. Like, when I was out riding and saw this thing, whatever it was, like, it didn't make any noise. I don't remember hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if, you know, a horse or a moose is, you know, kind of running, maybe not at, like, maybe it would have to be at a full kind of gallop or something. But, you know, you hear that rustle, you hear the weight of the hooves hitting the ground. And I don't remember any sound being
interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
I saw something one day, and we don't have moose here in Pennsylvania, not anymore. Long, long ago, many, many centuries ago we did, but not for 200 years. And I saw something one day, and I did hear a sound, which made me look up, and I saw this thing. It was huge, way bigger than anything that should be here in the woods. And my first thought went to moose, because I had seen one in Massachusetts. My friend had a cabin out there, and we'd seen one, and it was, they're different. You know, having grown up on a farm myself, you know, and not seen a moose before, you think, like, oh, big horse or something, you know, and they're bigger. They're
oh yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And this, that's the feeling I got from this. Whatever this thing was, I saw, was like, whoa, that's a moose, which is absolutely impossible. Whatever it wasn't a moose. But anyway, it made no sound then. It shot very fast. It ran away from me through the brush in this very, very brushy area, and it didn't make a sound going through the brush. So that, I find that really, really interesting that you note that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it's like I said, it was, it's so anomalous to me that I'm not really, like, comfortable pinning it down in any way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was very strange. It was very significant, obviously. Like, I think it's something I'll always remember. But, I mean, I guess the moose is the best kind of, for lack of a better word, reasonable explanation, right?
Right.
And the fact that my husband's friend thinks that he saw like a big albino moose hunting, and he's the way my husband remembered his story too, like he didn't see it clearly. It was something he saw from a tree stand while he was deer hunting, and kind of saw it, you know, moving off through the trees. Unfortunately, I couldn't get in touch with him, get any more details on that particular story from the area.
Right.
But now, yeah, you know, and even I was looking into kind of, you know, albino moose, and they do have a lot of significance for like native and indigenous people from this area and from the east coast of Canada too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're considered like a spirit or a totem animal that comes as a either as like a warning to people or as an ancestor sometimes, you know, kind of come back to show themselves, I guess, to their descendants. So, you know, even that in itself could have some kind of extra significance, I guess, you know, depending on how you look at these things.
Sure, yeah. How far away would you say this thing was from you when you were sitting on your pony?
About almost a field length. I know, I'm sorry that that's so general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you kind of, I guess, one kind of field length around there, a kind of average farmer's field or whatever, would be maybe like an acre?
Okay.
Or, yeah, I'd say about an acre. So it's about half an acre, 3/4 of an acre away from me.
Okay.
Because it was about 3/4 of the way to the next tree line. 66 feet. So, yeah, it probably was about 50 to 60 feet away.
Okay. So that's fairly close. That's close enough to, well, obviously you didn't determine what you were looking at, but I think it was something very normal. It's certainly close enough to, you know, recognize, oh, that's a deer, or oh, that's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's very interesting. Now, did your family have any more strange encounters around there, that property?
Nothing like that. Nothing involving the white thing ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom, although she was the only one in the family that never saw the white thing, and it sounds really corny to me almost to be calling it that, but I mean, for lack of a better term, right? So she was the only one in the family that never saw that. But years and years later, she did see some weird lights around the house at night. She said she woke up one night, and out her bedroom window, she saw several, like, white balls of light, like, pass by the window about 2-3 in the morning, you know? And whether that's related, whatever that was, I have no idea. It was quite some time after, though.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting, though. I don't know what the light phenomenon is, the weird lights, but it does seem to accompany all manner of other strangeness. So is this property still in your family?
Yep. It's very different now, unfortunately. Like, not the property itself, but the surrounding area has changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a dirt road anymore. It's paved. Every spare lot along it has been bought and had a house built on it. So, yeah, it's a lot different now. But, yeah, it's still there. Yeah, you know, I mean, I've known other, you know, because I grew up in the same small area most of my life. So, you know, I've heard other stories from other people in the area. They're kind of weird experiences. Nothing like what my family experienced. But, you know, I knew of one guy who said he had a UFO sighting fairly close to where my family's property was. But nothing else kind of specific to that property or that same vein of experiences that we had.
I did have someone contact me now, and when you told me about this, when you messaged me about this originally, I said, I've heard something like this before, and this was very early on in the podcast, and I cannot find the email. I'm pretty sure that a person emailed me. I'm almost positive they were from Canada. What province? I'm not sure. But I'm almost positive they were from Canada, and they talked about a white animal, just like an unidentified animal. It was definitely white, and I believe they said it moved in an undulating motion.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, that's so fascinating to me, because it's not like I've kind of been out there looking for similar experiences in any kind of dedicated or systematic way, but, you know, I've grown to become really interested in, like, fringe and paranormal topics and stuff like that. Like, I really enjoy your podcast and others that deal with similar topics and stuff, and I have had yet to hear anything that kind of came close or resembled what had happened to me. So, I mean, that's, to me, that's fascinating. Like, it's one of the main reasons I was excited to talk to you, because I was thinking, well, geez, maybe through this I'll hear, you know, some other similar story or something. Maybe someone has some similar experience that could kind of...
I can't guarantee it, but most likely someone will come forward. And I'm hoping this person, whoever it was, and I don't know whether they didn't want to come on and tell their story, or sometimes I lose the thread. You know, it's a one-man show, and I get a lot of email, and sometimes I just lose the thread, and I might have dropped the ball. But I'm hoping whoever it was is still listening. They will hear this and they will contact me, because it sounded so familiar to the point where I thought, you know, did you already contact me about this? And no, you hadn't. So hopefully this person will hear it and contact me again. But even if not, I will not be surprised if someone else doesn't contact us and say, I've seen something like that. As bizarre as the disembodied legs are, and we've gotten two stories of that so far, I'm now getting fairly regular disembodied leg submissions that people have seen.
Really?
And that is just so bizarre. It's like, what a bizarre thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, what really, what spurred me to contact you was hearing, I'm sorry, I forget the guest's name, but a guest from Washington State who had a story about, and it was kind of interesting to me too, because he was around the same age in his story as I was when I had this sighting or whatever. His story about being out, you know, in a kind of like semi-rural wooded area and seeing this big white creature on the trail. And just the fact that it was white and kind of some of the other similarities in the story, but that in particular stood out to me because I don't know, it just seems like that's never, you know, like I've heard other accounts of people seeing that kind of mirage or predator effect in the woods before. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of like weird crashes, lots of, you know, whether they're like Bigfoot or cryptid sightings of all kinds, but never anyone saying, you know, especially not in this region of the country or the continent even, saying, you know, it was something white. So that really stood out to me. And then the other part of his story that really, I mean, it wasn't kind of like page for page similar, but just the fact that he said later on, reminiscing about this encounter with one of his friends who was there at the time, that his friend had remembered it as being a black entity.
Yes.
Not a white one. And that really resonated with the kind of question my mom had asked me about, you know, like if you threw a rock at it kind of thing, like, for some reason, that suggested to me like a similar kind of, I don't know, spiritual or supernatural property of some kind.
Yes.
So that story really, like, that's when I had to write to you and be like, you know, I got to tell someone else about this.
Well, that's one of my favorite Bigfoot encounters for that exact reason. The fact that these two guys were both affected deeply. And by the way, there was a third guy there who says he saw nothing. So, you know,
right.
What do you do with that one? But these two guys both agree that they saw, you know, a big hairy monster, but can't agree on the color of it. They're literally opposite on the color of it, you know, and its intentions. And that's just completely fascinating to me. Completely fascinating. That episode was The Beast. I forget what episode number it was. And pretty sure the guy's name was Gage. who told the story. But yeah, that's been one of my favorite Bigfoot encounters, at least of recent times, that I've heard because of that. It's just completely fascinating. Very, very fascinating. Well, Lorraine, thank you so much. Oh, before you go, let me ask you one more question.
Okay.
Have you, at any time in your life, experienced sleep paralysis?
No. By sleep paralysis, you mean like that kind of like waking up paralyzed, or like a in-between waking and dream state, like as if you can't move.
Yeah.
No. Okay. No, I've never experienced that.
Okay. It's something I ask just everybody on the regular, and most of the time people have, but I think most people in general have experienced it, so I'm not sure there's a definite connection between seeing strange things and later in life having sleep paralysis, but it is something I ask people.
Yeah, no worries. I've heard you ask it before.
Yeah. Well, Lorraine, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's I really appreciate it, and I'm really looking forward to maybe hearing about someone else's similar experience or anyone with any ideas on what the heck happened.
Yeah, like I said, I can't promise it, but I am fairly confident we'll be hearing something.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to thank our patrons who make Strange Familiars possible. Thank you so much, patrons. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for your support. We literally could not do the show without you. If you want to help us make Strange Familiars and get extra shows besides, I think there's almost 60 of them right now. We're headed to 60 patron shows soon. You can become a patron at Patreon. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. $3 a month gets you those full extra episodes of Strange Familiars, but there are other levels of support there as well. You can get things like t-shirts, stickers, pins, and more. Go ahead and check it out, patreon.com/strangefamiliars. If you don't like the idea of a monthly subscription like Patreon, you can make a one-time donation. Just go to strangefamiliars.com, look in the show notes under any episode, and you'll see a paypal.me link. You can go ahead and click that and make a one-time donation. Everyone can help by sharing the show on social media, by liking and subscribing wherever you're listening, wherever you listen to podcasts, and by leaving us those nice 5-star reviews, which helps get the show in front of new potential listeners. I want to thank Dark Matter Digital Network for their donation. Thank you. It's a huge help. And now we move on to Photo of the Week. I really think we need a theme song.
Got on that.
Back to the stereo views, which I have to say, I think you've softened on stereo views lately. I think in times past, you're kind of like, they're just stereo views.
Yeah, but there's some really unique imagery, and I just like the format. You know, like
And it's still
lost media.
Still counts as an old-timey photograph.
Absolutely, yeah.
So when they were making stereo views back in the 1800s, did they have to hand glue these on the cards?
All the photos are hand glued on the cards.
And they would have been hand printed, you know, one at a time. Basically, a human is printing these photographs.
Yeah, so a lot of work goes into making stereo views.
Yeah, a lot of work. And that's why you occasionally get different and better prints.
Yeah, I've seen the same stereo view. And sometimes just from the left to the right, you can even see like an ever so slight, the contrast is just ever so slightly darker on the right side than the left. Look at her face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there are just ever so slight differences that make them unique.
So this one
sort of echoes the famous spirit photography that was common
in
the Victorian era. And this is an angel overlooking a little girl sleeping on a bed with a crazy quilt on it.
Yeah, I initially thought that this might have been a post-mortem because the girl's there. It is not. She's just asleep or probably fake asleep.
Mm-hmm.
But it has this ghostly kind of angel above her. The card's titled Her Guardian Angel. There's a whole poem on the back, printed in perhaps Southern vernacular, and a little explanation about the card and a little story about a girl and her guardian angel. But I chose this one just because of its very ghostly nature. You can see an image of the stereo view card if you go to the show notes under this episode at strangefamiliars.com. Click on that image, it'll take you to our Etsy shop, where you can find this and a few other photos of the week, which are left from previous weeks. You can also find artwork, copies of my books, copies of my music, and more there at Etsy. It's shop name Lost Grave, or you can just look up Strange Familiars. We should come up. I think that's it for this week. Again, if you're going to virtually attend the Strange Realities Conference, strangerealitiesconference.com, I will be speaking on Sunday. Otherwise, we will be back soon with another episode of Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts, music, books, art, podcasts, and more, darkhollerarts.com. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. Go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com for more. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, where you can join the Strange Familiars gathering group. We're on Instagram, @strangefamiliars.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.